A year ago, the seriousness of COVID-19 started to set in.
Issuing a safer at home order isn't something I thought we'd have to do. It's not something I wanted to do.
We're taking a look back at the major events that shaped the first year of the pandemic.
What we know about the virus has changed over the course of the last year. Hear from an epidemiologist on what we know now and what it means for the future of fighting COVID-19 and other potential viruses.
More people than ever sought refuge from the pandemic by heading outside. Businesses in the outdoor industry are still trying to keep up.
We didn't run a smarter business. We got luckier.
For 10 months, Wisconsin lawmakers didn't pass a single bill.
We were dysfunctional in 2020. And it's not getting any better right now through the early parts of 2021.
We're digging into the impact of the governor's and state legislators' decisions and how they're still impacting us.
You're listening to a WXPR special report, Here for a Year, the Impact of COVID-19 on Our Lives. Wisconsin's year of COVID-19 has featured one milestone after another, many of them disturbing to people in the state. I'm Katie Thorson.
I'm Ben Meyer.
And I'm Aaron Gottsacker. You're listening to a WXPR special report. Over the next hour, we're taking a look back at how COVID-19 has impacted the Northwoods as we look ahead to vaccination efforts and the potential end of the pandemic.
We want to start with a look back at the timeline of how Wisconsin went from COVID-free to 500,000 cases, with plenty of tension, confusion, and sickness along the way.
On February 5th, 2020, Wisconsin reported its first case of COVID-19, found in a person who had just returned from Beijing. In mid-March, as the virus started to creep outward, Governor Tony Evers closed all schools for 2.5 weeks. 6 days later, the state reported its first two deaths from the disease.
On March 24th, Evers ordered people to stay at home and non-essential businesses to close as part of his Safer at Home order.
Issuing a Safer at Home order isn't something I thought we'd have to do. It's not something I wanted to do. And it's not something I take lightly.
3 days after that.
So we do have our first case in Oneida County.
Then the state was thrown into confusion in early April as a high turnout election loomed. Evers tried multiple methods to block or postpone in-person voting, saying large gatherings were too dangerous, but he was ultimately rejected by the Supreme Court.
More than 400,000 people showed up at the polls on Election Day, and the state called out the National Guard to help with staffing.
I'm not comfortable, but I feel like it's my obligation, and so I'm doing it.
Joe Biden won the Democratic presidential primary, and Jill Karofsky won a seat on the Supreme Court.
On April 16th, Evers closed schools for the remainder of the year, and the next week, thousands of anti-lockdown protesters gathered at the state capitol. May 13th brought a consequential ruling from the state Supreme Court, decisively striking down Evers' stay-at-home order. Republican State Representative Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk was among the supporters of the court's decision, saying it upheld individual freedom.
There's people that are scared to death of this. That's okay. There's people that think this is a hoax. That's okay. And there's people that are in the middle. That's okay.
At the end of the month, an Oneida County committee approved a permit allowing Hodak Country Fest to proceed, drawing tens of thousands of people to Rhinelander.
I don't think that 16,000 people on a daily basis, on a one-day thing, out at Country Fest is any different than if you combine Walmart, Home Depot, or Menards.
Facing pressure from the community, Country Fest changed plans and canceled the event 2 days later.
As cases continued to rise statewide, WXPR reported in mid-July that cases in the Northwoods were likely being undercounted. Dr. Ryan Westergaard said positive cases for many visitors and seasonal residents were being attributed to their home county instead of the Northwoods.
When we receive notice of a positive test for COVID or any reportable condition, case report gets tagged to the area where they live.
On July 21st, Wisconsin exceeded 1,000 daily cases for the first time, and Minocqua canceled its popular Beef-a-Rama event the next week. On the first day of August, Governor Evers enacted a new mandate. Everyone age 5 or older must wear masks in all indoor spaces. But a WXPR investigation found no sheriff's office in the Northwoods would enforce the mandate, with some calling it unconstitutional.
Not a law. That's part of our opinion about why we believe it violates the Constitution.
On September 4th, several thousand people streamed into the Crandon area for the annual off-road races.
We're not too worried about it. I guess we're outside and we don't have anybody with any real health issues, so we're just going to go with it and hope it goes good.
The nearby Secaucan Chippewa community in Mole Lake had strongly urged cancellation of the races. By mid-September, WXPR reported Forest County's case rate was nearly double that of the next highest in the state.
On September 20th, Wisconsin passed a depressing milestone, reporting its 100,000th case. It had taken more than 6 months to get there, but COVID case numbers started exploding. In just one more month, the state passed 200,000 cases, and an additional 3 weeks put it above 300,000 cases.
In early October, the state limited indoor gatherings to 25% of a building's capacity, and Evers extended the statewide mask mandate. The holidays brought new, terrible records to Wisconsin. The state reached its peak on December 22nd, when it reported 120 COVID deaths in a single day.
As always, our thoughts are with the families and friends who have lost loved ones, especially as you feel this grief during the holiday season.
But the coming vaccine provided some hope. The first healthcare workers were vaccinated in December, and the elderly started getting shots in January.
By early February, Wisconsin had passed 5,000 deaths and 500,000 total cases, but more than 500,000 vaccine doses had been distributed and daily case numbers were gradually dropping.
On February 4th, political tension in Madison boiled again. Despite universal opposition from health experts, the Republican legislature repealed the statewide mask mandate, calling it an unconstitutional overreach by Evers. The governor responded by reinstating it with a new public health emergency and order an hour later.
Wearing a mask is the most basic thing we can do to keep each other safe. If the legislature keeps playing politics and we don't keep wearing masks, we're going to see more preventable deaths, and it's going to take even longer to get our state and our economy back on track.
One day later, Evers vetoed a Republican-backed COVID-19 bill, the first legislation of its kind passed in 10 months. Among other provisions, the bill would have prohibited employers from requiring workers to get vaccinated.
On February 10th, a second variant of the virus, the so-called UK strain, was detected in Wisconsin. Then, on February 22nd, Wisconsin went 2 straight days without a reported COVID-19 death. One day later, though, 33 more people died of the virus.
As we enter March, there remains plenty Wisconsin doesn't know. How many people will get infected and die? When will everyone have access to a vaccine? Can any of the deep political wounds be mended? We'll find out in year 2 of COVID in the state.
Since healthcare workers first learned about the novel coronavirus, a lot has changed. We now know so much more about how COVID-19 is spread and how to treat and prevent the virus. Aaron Gottsacker spoke with an epidemiologist about a year of studying COVID-19.
Since the emergence of COVID-19 until now, the scientific community has learned an immense amount about this virus. Here with me to talk about these advancements is Dr. Ajay Sethi. Dr. Sethi is an associate professor of population health sciences and the director of the Master of Public Health program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's an infectious disease epidemiologist and works on the COVID-19 response with colleagues at the university. Hi, Dr. Sethi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing well.
Well, let's start at the beginning. A year ago, when you first found out about COVID-19, what were you and your colleagues thinking?
Probably the first thing we felt was maybe a little worry and fear for what this could become. It was unclear what this virus exactly was. It was obviously transmitted through the respiratory pathway, and we knew it was a coronavirus, and it was a brand new coronavirus, so our minds instantly went back to the original SARS virus and also the other pandemic coronavirus, MERS-CoV. And, we also thought about influenza as a working model, since that's very common commonly spread in the winter months. So we probably were very confused as to what to make out of this new virus and what was going to happen. But we just chipped away, you know, one day at a time using new information that was emerging.
Yeah, well, we've learned so much about COVID-19 in a relatively short amount of time. What are some of the things that we now know that we really had no idea about at the beginning?
I'd say that we didn't quite appreciate how much asymptomatic spread sort of leads to fueling the epidemic in communities. Not a lot of viruses are spread when people don't have any symptoms, but this one clearly does for at least, you know, a couple of days before symptoms emerge, somebody is infectious. And when you don't have symptoms, you're not prompted to stay at home. You won't even know that you're infected. And that has been kind of a driver for the spread in communities. And that was a little surprising, but not so much. There are other viruses that do the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and in the past few months, variations of the coronavirus have started spreading in countries around the world. What should we know about these variations, and how can we protect ourselves from these variants?
Yeah, as long as we allow the virus to replicate in the communities, you know, we live in, as long as spread continues, the virus is going to evolve. And, you know, it's possible that a set of mutations can lead to a new variant that can be more infectious, as we've already observed with the UK variant that has been detected in Wisconsin. And future new variants will inevitably emerge if we allow it, because a lot of viruses do evolve, and certainly this one does, not as fast as some viruses, but just enough that it causes the emergence of these new strains that can have very different characteristics. And that's a concern. It sort of highlights how important it is that we roll out the vaccine that is effective against the strains that are circulating, get everybody protected as quickly as possible. That will sort of dampen the ability for the virus to spread, hopefully, in communities, along with our mitigation efforts. And we can prevent new variants from emerging that way.
Well, is there anything else you think we should know about the evolution of COVID-19 while we're talking?
Well, I think it's important to just remember that this pandemic certainly was a surprise, but the idea of a virus, a novel virus emerging, you know, has been a worry for a long time. And as a society, as a global society, we just unfortunately underfund sort of the surveillance of new pathogens in general. And it's something that hopefully this will allow us to advocate and support for more funding in that arena. This pandemic has also shown that there are a lot of inequities in society and that public health in general is underfunded. And I'm hoping we can learn a lesson there to just recognize that preparedness needs to be amplified for the next big threat. And we're not even over this one. So it's hard to look in the future, but we have to do that in addition to dealing with what we have before us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Sethi.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate it.
The economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic is unprecedented. In the north central region of Wisconsin, unemployment skyrocketed from 3.8% in March to 13.5% in April 2020, right after the stay-at-home order first went into place. While the employment rate in our region has mostly recovered, people are still feeling the impact. Among businesses hardest hit are those in the leisure and hospitality industry. Katie Thorson spoke to some business owners in that industry about what this last year has been like for them and why they're still optimistic about the future despite the challenges.
Pam Murphy and I sit in an otherwise empty coffee shop on the corner of Brown and Rive Street in downtown Rhinelander. We're both wearing masks and seated more than 6 feet across from one another with a large table between us. The last year has had more than its share of challenges for the Tilly's coffee shop owner.
We're still in the building phase of our business.
The stay-at-home order forcing her to shut down for 2 months came less than a year after Tilly's had opened its doors.
I mean, it came quickly. We didn't really have any time to prepare for it.
The closure meant a loss of product on top of bills that still had to be paid. When Tilly's reopened last summer, there was new plexiglass installed, masks required, and new cleaning protocols. But still, customers were slow to return. Summer saw a steady stream of tourists and decent business for the coffee shop. But when COVID-19 cases started increasing in the fall, the governor issued a new capacity limiting order. It became difficult to keep operating.
It's hard to seat at 50% capacity and feel that you're going to be successful as a restaurant.
After a few weeks of takeout only, Tilly's closed its doors temporarily in January while still doing some retail and coffee bag sales.
I mean, I want the health professionals to tell us when it's safe to reopen. I pretty much am waiting to see what they say.
Across town on the west side of Rhinelander, Roman Cinema has now been open for months, but that doesn't necessarily mean business is coming in.
To this day still, we get people that ask us if we're even open. And that's challenging.
Like Murphy and many other business owners, theater owner George Roman has faced challenge after challenge during the pandemic. The movie theater closed with the stay-at-home order in March, but it didn't reopen when it lifted in May because there were no new movies to show.
And they basically wiped the calendar clean of all the movies.
Roman tried to get creative with takeout concession sales for at-home movie nights and eventually offering private screenings so people could see some older movies in theaters without worrying about strangers who might be carrying the virus sitting next to them. But still, bills and other expenses piled up.
At the end of the day, you know, I look at the numbers and it was still pretty brutal, but it kept us relevant.
Roman was able to open on a somewhat regular schedule when Tenet came out in August. But after its poor box office sales, studios once again pushed back release dates for movies.
You know, then you instantly get into this this situation or this mindset where you have to save costs. You're in survival mode, basically.
After a month of daily operations, Roman scaled back to weekend operations, and for the last several months has been offering both private screenings and regular movie showings. He says it's encouraging to have people back in the building again and excited to see movies. The day after Christmas was one of his best days during the pandemic with Wonder Woman in theaters. But for every step forward, it sometimes feels like two steps back.
Literally on the same day, I got my my public service bill, right, for my heat and electrical, and it was bigger than what we took in that day. So that just wiped everything out there.
Roman told me that for a year-to-year comparison, revenues are over 90% lost. Still, despite the challenges, Roman is optimistic.
And I think we're going to get there, but it sure is scary in the interim.
Back at Tilly's, Murphy shares the optimism.
I feel pretty optimistic about it right now because the numbers in Wisconsin are getting better and people are getting vaccinated, and that does make me feel hopeful about it. So we're hopeful that we can reopen soon.
Looking at the numbers, regional economist with the Department of Workforce Development, Mitchell Ropp, can see that recovery.
Overall, we've seen COVID having a varied effect among industries, areas, unemployment, and jobs. But overall, we've been improving.
Ropp says the leisure and hospitality industry, which includes movie theaters and restaurants, has been the hardest hit during the pandemic, and our region has a higher portion of its workforce in that industry. But that doesn't mean the Northwoods was necessarily hit harder.
Sales tax revenue provides some evidence to think that leisure and hospitality in North Central is doing relatively better than leisure and hospitality statewide.
Both Roman and Murphy hope that recovery will continue into this year and know there will be new challenges. They both told me they see building customer confidence as one of their greatest obstacles.
I'll be the first one to say not everybody is comfortable coming out still, right? Not just to the movies, but really to anywhere. And it's still on us to make people comfortable.
To that end, Roman has overhauled the theater. There's now assigned seating so they can space groups out in the theater. There's more time between shows so they can go in and clean. Plexiglass separates people and workers at the concession counter, and there's no more self-serve. And face masks are required. At Tilly's, Murphy says it's not so much changing their safety measures, but adjusting to people's new habits. This includes online ordering and more takeout.
It's really hard when your customers' habits change.
Despite the challenges they've overcome and the ones that still lie ahead, both business owners are looking forward to the future as more people get vaccinated and people get comfortable with the new regular, whatever that may be.
Rhinelander and the Northwoods is going to be booming this summer because people will want to take advantage of getting out and doing things. That to me is really something to look forward to.
Interruptions, internet problems, and kids stuck in front of a screen, they're all issues parents are facing during the pandemic if they chose to have their children learn virtually. When parents are trying to work from home at the same time, those challenges are doubled. COVID-19 concerns led almost a third of families in the school district of Rhinelander to choose virtual learning this semester. Ben Meyer brings us the victories and challenges inside those households.
Zoom meeting interruptions like this.
Yes, Luna. Sorry, Ben.
Happens several times a day for Leanne Viju Miranda. That's her kindergarten daughter, Luna, asking for help.
I constantly feel like my focus is being shifted, you know, every like 5-10 minutes.
Miranda is the registrar at Nicolet College, and she's been working from home since the pandemic started. Sometimes her days include 10 virtual meetings while kindergartner Luna and her other daughter, fourth grader Phoebe, learn virtually. It's a juggling act, like when a few weeks ago, Luna kept asking for help while Miranda was in a work meeting.
Finally, she came over to me and said, "Mom, your kid is way more important than your computer." I paused and I thought, you know what? She's totally right.
Because of health issues in the family, the girls' parents decided to keep Phoebe and Luna learning virtually this fall instead of sending them to school in person. It was a difficult decision.
Very, very tough.
Also in Rhinelander, Shelley Watts wrestled with the same choice for her kids. Peyton and Trevor, both in fifth grade, were desperate to go to school. Instead, Watts kept them home, concerned for her family's health. Like Miranda, she now has to balance their school with her work under the same roof.
It's sometimes it's kind of chaos.
Watts is a referral coordinator for Ascension, working largely from home. She usually wakes the kids up during one of her Zoom meetings, then puts them on a Zoom meeting of their own. The teacher is in her living room, the students in theirs.
You guys need your whiteboards, dry erase markers today if you have them.
Class sessions are fairly short, and the individual work can sometimes be challenging for Watts' kids.
My kids, when they need help, I'm like, okay, when I'm done with this call, or let me just finish this paperwork up and then I can help you. And it's all day.
Sound exhausting?
It is. It is.
From time to time, Watts' son Trevor meets with Central Elementary School teacher Kathy Rogich to work on math.
How would you read that in math world?
3 76 hundredths.
Excellent. Okay.
Rogich is a special education teacher who, nowadays, never sees the classroom.
All online, all virtual, all the time, yes.
Rogich volunteered to be a virtual teacher, and she says it's going better than she could have expected.
At the beginning, it felt kind of disjointed and everybody was kind of reluctant to, you know, log on and all that. But now I feel a sense of community with the groups. And it's really cool to see as time has gone on.
She believes the virtual option actually provides a better learning experience for some of her special education students, especially those with social or attention struggles.
I'm finding I'm having a much easier time getting, you know, a lesson across one-to-one or in a small group on Zoom than I can in a classroom setting sometimes.
Rogich enjoys it so much, she'd like to stay a virtual teacher even after the pandemic ends. Back in the Miranda house.
So she's swimming in a pool.
I asked the girls to show me what they've been working on. It's a comic book. Luna does the drawings and Phoebe writes the story.
He says, "I like your swimsuit, what's your name?" And she says, "Thanks, Angela's."
It's work done away from a screen. Hours on screens, of course, are a necessity of virtual learning, which bothers their mom, Leanne.
You know, there's a lot of guilt that comes with that because I don't even know if that's okay. You know, I don't know.
Meanwhile, she has no option but to stick to her screen all day as a full-time worker, full-time mom, and frequent homework helper.
I still feel like high-level stress all day long. Have to be on your game. You know, you can never let your guard down. You're always thinking what's next.
Working from home, learning from home, the interruptions, the stress, that might not change for a long time if the pandemic persists, as Shelley Watts told her kids.
I told them, which they weren't happy, I said, you know, there is no certain answer. You may be doing this for another whole year at home. And I said, I'm sorry, but you know, this is the reality of it.
For Miranda, the only way to stay composed is by taking a shorter-term view.
I live day by day because otherwise that prospect of, oh my gosh, I have to continue this for 8 more months is super scary and intimidating, right?
Both parents told us they appreciate spending more time with their kids at home and like having a better understanding of what they're learning. About 520 students in Rhinelander schools are still on a full virtual learning program.
For months now, we've heard the same pieces of advice to stop the spread of COVID-19. Wear a mask, socially distance, and stay outside rather than attend indoor gatherings. It turns out people listened, at least to that last suggestion. Erin Gottsacker has more about how the pandemic pushed people outdoors and what that means for the Northwoods.
The past year struck a devastating blow to industries across Wisconsin. Many restaurants and hotels saw their revenue reduced by at least 25% since pre-COVID days. Movie theaters crumbled without the regular release of Hollywood hits. And tribal casinos shut down for months, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. But in a year with so much loss, at least one area saw significant gains: outdoor recreation.
Once we got to summer, things took off.
That's Mitch Mode. We're talking in his store, Mel's Trading Post, in downtown Rhinelander.
We didn't run a smarter business. We got luckier.
Mel's Trading Post sells all kinds of outdoor equipment, from bikes and kayaks to snowshoes and skis. Mode said these items have always been popular.
But in the year of COVID, became increasingly strong to the point where it's no secret, I think, in the world that bicycles were difficult to find on a good day, impossible the rest of the time.
When we met, I counted 11 bicycles on display on the ground floor of the store.
You should be counting a lot more, and in the basement there should be a whole lot more, and they're just not there.
Mode says normally he'll have 100 to 150 bikes stored in the basement as inventory. But these days, supply can't keep up with demand. He's been told his next shipment of bikes won't arrive until October or November. And bikes aren't the only in-demand item. Mode says canoes sell before they hit the shelves, and he's been selling kayaks every week.
We never sell kayaks in January and February.
Northwoods ATV and snowmobile dealers are in a similar boat. Joe Yakey is the general manager at Anago Yamaha. We spoke with him last month about record sales.
2019 was the best year we ever had. 2020 was about 25% ahead of that. I mean, it literally off the charts for us.
The International Snowmobile Manufacturers Association estimates snowmobile sales will be up 15 to 20% this winter. That would be the highest it's been since the winter of 1995 to 96. Outside of sports shops, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Wisconsin Policy Forum both have evidence suggesting more people spent time outside last year, whether they were camping at state parks or out fishing and hunting. Missy Van Landet works with the DNR. She says Wisconsin state parks typically see a 2 to 3% increase in visitors from year to year.
During 2020, we saw just over a 22% increase in visitation.
That's more than 20 million total visitors. Sales of fishing and hunting licenses also jumped last year, according to the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Fishing licenses are at their highest level in 5 years, following years of steady decline. And license sales to out-of-state anglers were especially high, up by 6% compared to 2019. That points to a trend many full-time Northwoods residents noticed last year, a burst in summer tourism. Matthew Leitner is the director of the Rhinelander-Oneida County Airport. He noticed that surge as well when we spoke with him back in June.
Well, we've always been a hot summer market, no pun intended, and I don't think the demand has necessarily ebbed because of the corona pandemic. If anything, it might have been amplified by it for people that are looking to, escape cities.
He says the Rhinelander airport performed noticeably better than other Wisconsin and Michigan airports during the pandemic. So will this surge in summer visitors and interest in outdoor recreation continue into coming years? Well, the pandemic isn't over yet. Despite an ongoing vaccination effort, experts are still urging caution against COVID-19. And it's hard to say when sporting and concert venues will host crowds of pre-COVID numbers. Until people can resume those other summer activities, Missy Van Landet from the DNR says state parks are getting ready for another record year.
We're definitely still expecting to see, you know, pretty high visitation this year, if not even higher than last year.
Already, she says state parks hosted over 60% more visitors in January of 2021 compared to a year ago. So it sounds like we're not out of the woods yet.
You're listening to a WXPR special report, Here for a Year, the Impact of COVID-19 on Our Lives.